want to. This is the one about the only map that shows where Tarshish would be. And all right. Tarshish is in southern Spain. We don't know exactly, but somewhere around southern Spain. You know, Portugal, modern Portugal. We don't know exactly, but Tarshish, just a kind of a colony down there in that area. And Jonah wanted to go away from God. God told him to go preach to the people of Nineveh. He did not want to go preach to the people of Nineveh. So he set out, and he set out from Joppa, which was somewhere around that place. Let me see if I can get a better map. I've shown you that that's where Tarshish is. Get it in a minute. All right. There's the divided kingdom in the days of Jeroboam II of Israel and Uzziah of Judah. So, all right. So, all right, there is Joppa. So that's where he went and got on board the ship. And see, he was setting out all the way. Man, he was going to go he was going to go away from God, from what God wanted him to do. So he set sail to go out there. And as he was going along, God sent a great storm after the boat. And so the men on the mariners got real afraid of that storm. And they said, What's going to happen? We got to do something. So the captain went down into the hole down there, and Jonah was asleep down there. It's interesting to me, he was asleep down there. So he said, what are you doing? Get up, pray to your God, because we're all going to be lost. So he wanted him to pray to his God. And so Jonah was willing to pray to his God, but he said, well, it's my fault. So all of the sailors said, what? What have you done? They asked him all kinds of questions. Like in verse 8, look at that, verse 8. Then said they unto him, tell us, we pray thee, for whose cause this evil has come upon us? What is thine occupation? And whence comest thou? What is thy country, and of what people art thou? So they really asked him a lot of questions. And he said, I am a Hebrew. Notice that he said, I fear God. I fear, and how did he identify God? The God who did what? That's right. Who made the heaven and the earth and the dry land. See that? And I've told you, What identification is that? How did God identify himself in the beginning with that? In Genesis, remember? What does Genesis say? In the beginning what? God created. See, so Jonah is identifying. And in the New Testament, we find Paul doing that on two occasions at least. He identifies God as the God that made the dry land and the seas and things like that. So he said, it's my fault, it's my fault. So he said, you might as well throw me overboard. And they said, no, we can't do that. So they tried to do all kinds of things. Now, it mentions rowing. Most of these ships had oars that they could run out, and they didn't use them. What if they had a good wind? Then they wouldn't use them. But if they didn't have a good wind, then they would row. So they tried, these men tried and tried to get to shore, go back. I don't know exactly where they were going. They didn't know maybe where they were going, but something's got to happen. So they said, oh, Jehovah, we beseech you, let us not perish for this man's life. Lay not upon us innocent blood,
For thou, O Jehovah, hast done as it pleased thee.
So they took Jonah and threw him over the side of the boat into the water, into the sea. And what was the sea doing at this time? Waves and all that stuff. And immediately, what is that God had done? Prepared a sea creature. Now, sometimes a whale, but it's not specified. The book, the Bible is not a book of taxonomy. It doesn't classify the genus and species of the fish that are involved and things like that. So we don't know what kind of a fish it was. So he cast them forth into the sea, and what happened? The sea stopped. See that? It's just like when Jesus said, "Peace, be still." What happened? It just stopped. Now they threw the Jonah out there in the sea. What did the sea do? What did that tell them? They're doing what God wanted them to do. So they did that. And Jonah prepared a great fish to swallow up Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. And we talked about that a little bit. There are all kinds of creatures it could have been. But it was a creature big enough to swallow a man. So in chapter 2, Jonah prayed and prayed to Jehovah his God out of the fish's belly. And I really like what he says. I called by reason of mine affliction unto Jehovah, and he answered me out of the belly of Sheol. Now, why does he say Sheol? What's another word for Sheol? Like the grave or the pit or something like that. Huh? Yeah, yeah. So, but in the original, it's not hell. It's not, in other words, hell would be Gehenna. That would be the place of eternal punishment and so on, things like that. So, Sheol is the idea of the grave when you've been buried and so on, things like that. Out of the belly of Sheol, in other words, he's in the belly of a whale or the belly of a great sea creature. So he can't say, "This is where I am." So he says, out of the belly of Sheol, as he views himself in that fish's stomach way down there, he said, "You heard my voice." Isn't that something? You heard my voice. In verse 3, for you did cast me into the depths in the heart of the sea, and the flood round about me. All your waves and your billows passed over me. And I said, "I am cast out from before your eyes." Remember, he was in the belly of that fish. It was dark in there. And he said, "I am cast from before thine eyes. Yet I will look again toward thy holy temple." And what did we say? Where did we say the temple was? Jerusalem. So he has confidence that he would look upon it again. The water compassed me about, even of the soul. The deep was round about me, and the weeds were wrapped about my head. I went down to the bottoms of the mountains. In other words, he's on the bottom. And you just, I don't dwell too much on it. But Jonah had to realize, what could he do? Basically, beyond praying. Well, that's what he did. But there wasn't anything he could do about it. He could not rescue himself. That's the amazing thing. The earth was with its bars closed upon me forever. Yet thou hast brought my life from the pit. Now that's another word for the grave. The pit, O Jehovah my God. My soul fainted within me. I remembered Jehovah, and my prayer came unto thee, into thy, what? Holy temple. They that regard lying vanities forsake their own mercy, but I will sacrifice unto thee with a voice of thanksgiving. And what the last half of that verse, what does it say? I will pay You see that?
I will pay that which I vowed. And then what does he add?
Salvation is from the Lord.
That's a wonderful thing. All right, in verse 10, the Lord spake to the fish, and it threw Jonah up, vomited out Jonah on the dry land. Now, at this point, chapter 1, Jonah is running away from God. He is fleeing from God. Now then we have Jonah as he thinks he's heading toward God. So in chapter 3, the word of Jehovah came unto Jonah the second time, saying, now then, the first time, what did God tell Jonah to do? Go and preach to the people of Nineveh, that great city. You remember? And we don't even see it over there. It's a little northeast of that map there. But Nineveh, a great city. And God is going to talk about what a great city it was. And so he says, I want you to go preach to the people of Nineveh. So he, let's see, in verse 4. All right. Let's see, Ryan, will you read that? Okay, so he says, arise and go to Nineveh, that great city, and preach unto it the preaching that I bid you. So he went. Now he's going to go. And it's a pretty good journey. Pretty long journey to get there. And what did he warn Ryan? What did he say? How many days? 40 days. It means you have 40 days. To straighten up, to do the things that I am not liking. But the thing is, the people of Nineveh believed God. This is a remarkable thing. The people of Nineveh were pagan people, but they were hearing this preaching, and they were really impressed with this preaching. So they believed God, and they proclaimed a fast and put on sackcloth, which is sackcloth. In other words, you know, are you familiar with what a burlap sack looks like? A lot of people don't know what a burlap sack looks like. But it's not something you would want to wear because it's scratchy. And most burlap sacks are that way. So it's scratchy. So they believed God, they proclaimed a fast, and put on sackcloth. Why were they putting on sackcloth? Because it was not nice to wear. It was scratchy, kind of doing penance. Put on sackcloth from the greatest of them, even to the least of them. The tidings reached the king of Nineveh, even the king of Nineveh. We don't know who the king of Nineveh was. He arose from his throne and laid his robe from him and covered him with sackcloth. Wow, even he did that. And he sat in ashes. And he made proclamation and published throughout Nineveh by the decree of the king and his nobles, saying, let neither man nor beast, nor herd, nor flock taste anything, nor let them feed nor drink water, but let them be covered with sackcloth, both man and beast. That's a remarkable. Let them be covered with sackcloth, and let them turn every one from his evil way and from the hand of violence that is in his hands. Now this is God, through Jonah, saying this is what you need to do. This is what you not only need to do, you must do it. If you're going to rescue yourself, you need to do that. And he asked, who knoweth whether God will turn and repent and turn away from his fierce anger that we perish not? So they said, there is a chance. And they took that chance. What did Jonah told them? What was his preaching? Repent. So they had the idea that if they did that, then they would be doing what God said. And so God saw their works, they turned from their evil way, and God repented of the evil which he said. Now, when you think about God repenting of evil, the word evil does not describe the character of God. It does describe calamity. And sometimes bringing calamity is a synonym for evil. So he would bring calamity on them. And warning, if you don't repent, I will bring a calamity on you. See, that's the idea. I will bring calamity on you. And so they believed God, proclaimed a fast, and repented. And so that was the idea. God repented of the evil which he said he would do unto them. The evil here, as I said, means calamity. It means bad things. People, they're going to have... Well, how would you describe what God is going to do to them? Bad things. Things they are not going to like. So, see, that's the idea. So he said, I'm not going to do that. He said he would do it unto them, and he did it not. But it displeased Jonah. Now here we get Jonah running ahead of God. He's running away from God, running toward God. Now he's running ahead of God. It pleased Jonah. It displeased Jonah exceedingly, and very angry, and he prayed unto the Lord. Scott, can you read a little bit there in chapter 4? Now, think about this. Is that something we don't want God to be? What he's saying here is exactly we want God to be the way we want God to be. If God were not that way, who could be saved? But why is Jonah displeased? Because God has allowed what? Nineveh. He's allowed Nineveh to exist. So he says, oh Lord, take my life from me. Remember when Elijah had fled from God? What did Elijah say? Take my life from me. Same thing Jonah is saying. Take my life from me. It's better for me to die than to live. And then Jehovah said, and remember, this is in the original, Yahweh. It is the word Jehovah. So sometimes he uses Elohim, another word for God, but sometimes he uses the word for Jehovah. And he said, doest thou well to be angry? And then Jonah went out of the city and sat down on the east side of the city. Steve, can you read a little bit for me in verse 5? He was waiting now to see who's going to make what happen. This is what God was going to do. He's waiting to see what God was going to do. He made him a booth and sat under in the shade till he might see what God would what would become of the city. All right, go ahead in verse 6 now. All right, now hold on just a minute. This is a really fascinating thing to me. Because in the footnote here, it has the Latin name of this. And it's Palma Christi. Palma Christi. And then that's the Latin. Then it gives the Hebrew, Kikayam. That Palma Christi. When I was a boy, there was a plant that grew, and we just called it a palm of crystals, pommel crystal. And I think that's exactly the plant that's being referred to here. It was a pretty plant. And I decided that I was going to feed some rabbits that I had. So I took that, some leaves of that plant, and fed them. And you know what they did? They all died. And it didn't take them long. I mean, they died. So that was the pommel crystal. Well, apparently, that's the very thing that, in Latin, pomma crystal. Pomma Christi. So anyway, he prepared a gourd. He prepared a worm when the morning arose the next day, and it smote the gourd. So, Steve, he prepared a worm, and when the morning rose the next day, what smote the gourd? The worm. What did he do? He gnawed it so that it died. So, the next day it smote the gourd, that it withered, and it came to pass when the sun arose, God prepared a sultry east wind. And the sun beat down upon the head of Jonah. Now that's hot country out there. And the sun beat down upon the head of Jonah, then he fainted. And what did he do again? What did he request for himself? Again, that he die. That's not worth my living. He requested for himself that he might die. So, it is better for me to die than to live. Now, look at what he says here in verse 9. Ryan, what does he say there? He says, yes, it is right for me to be angry. I'm so angry I could what? I could die. I think about people saying stuff like that. You know, people say things like that without thinking what they're saying. When you say you wish you could die, you're telling God, you better be careful what you wish. Do you do well? Yes, I do well to be angry even unto death. And the Lord said, now this is remarkable. By the way, do you know what God could have done this whole time? What could he have done when Jonah said, no, God, I'm not going to do what you said. I'm going to go into the sea. I'm not going to do what you said. What could God do? Multitude of things, all of which had to do with killing Jonah. But he didn't do that. You see that? God was merciful. What was God doing? What was he doing here? He was teaching Jonah a lesson. A lesson that we knew too. A lesson that we need to. Jehovah said, you have regard for the gourd for which you have not labored, neither made it grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night. So what substance is there to a gourd? How valuable? What is the value of this gourd, this gourd vine? What was the value to Jonah? It was providing shade. That's the whole deal. It was providing shade. Then when God prepared the worm and it gnawed the vine so that it died, then what was Jonah angry about? Oh no, and what was Jonah's job there? What had he done? Had he planted the vine and made it grow? He hadn't done anything. See, that's the thing. He hadn't done anything. Not a thing. You have regard for the gourd for which you have not labored, neither made it grow, which came up in a night and perished in a night. And then verse 11. Scott, what does he say in verse 11? Now, the idea of that many people that cannot discern between their right hand and their left hand, does that mean they're all nonsense? They're all ignoramuses? No. No, it doesn't mean that. What does it mean? Probably. Yeah, probably their age, where are more than 120,000 persons that cannot discern between their right hand and their left, and also much cattle. So the idea that God is teaching Jonah, this is a really good idea. When God tells you or lays something before you that He wants you to do, what can you do? You can say yes. You can say no. But you need to realize you're promising God. You're saying something to God. And He says, should I not have regard for Nineveh, that great city? What have you done? What have you done, Jonah? I'm the one that's responsible for the world. You're not the one responsible. I am. And if I won't have mercy on these people, I will have mercy on them. By the way, how many times do you object to God showing you mercy? Anybody want to complain because God has shown you mercy? A lot of times I think about somebody who's been in a very bad situation, and they don't seem to have any idea that God was connected with it at all. And when something like that happens, do you feel like praying? What do you pray for? When something bad happens to you, do you get concerned? Do you say, oh no, I'm afraid of this. I'm going to pray to God. You would think that more people do that. It's amazing how few people do that. But we need to do it. In our own lives, that's one of the points that He's making here. So, now let me ask, does anyone have a point that you would like to make about the story of Jonah? Any point you want to make? Yeah, exactly. That's right. All right. Okay. Yeah. That's right. All of these things are things that God did to teach lessons. To teach lessons. That's right. Very good. Very good. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting just to see how many things God appointed in this story. Really interesting thing. All right. Now, in the note I have here, both Hebrew and the Greek words mean a great sea creature of some kind, not necessarily a whale or a fish. Jesus used the Greek word for great sea creature when He referred to Jonah's story, Matthew 12 and verse 40. Most English translators have chosen to use the word whale to convey the meaning of the word. And indeed, the whale is a great sea creature. And I make the point, do not spend time debating over the sea creature. And if I can't know the genus and species, I think I'll leave it with God. Not going to try to do that. Yeah.
That's right. That's right. In the belly. Yeah. Absolutely. That's right. And think about this. Do you remember Obadiah? Do you remember what the subject of Obadiah was about? Edom. What was Edom? That was Esau. Were the Edomites God's people? No. Now you see, the Ninevites, were they God's people? No. And yet God was concerned about them. So that's an additional point. And we'll see, as we study the various prophets, that God was concerned about the Gentiles as well. I think that's remarkable. And the more you study the prophets have a kind of have a thing going. They get more and more emphatic about God is going to extend his mercy to the Gentiles. So that's the idea. I appreciate those points, Scott. I really appreciate those points. Anybody else? All right. Now then, let me say another word here about Uzziah, king of Judah. Another name for him as Azariah. He lived and reigned 52 years. That was a long reign. And after Amaziah was killed, the people of Judah took Azariah, or Uzziah, and made him king in his father's stead. He was only 16 years old when he became king and ruled for 52 years. At first, Uzziah was a good king. Uzziah was a good king for most of his life. He was aided by a prophet named Zechariah. Zechariah. Now that's also the name of a prophet. Zechariah. But this is not the prophet. But this was a man named Zechariah. A prophet named Zechariah. And as long as Uzziah sought the Lord blessed him. So that's the idea. So, once again, in this map, this is Israel up here, and this is Judah down here. So, the kingdom of Solomon would have extended to the Euphrates River. But other than that, the kingdom here, the kingdom of Israel, and the kingdom of Judah, almost equal. Came pretty close to being the same extent. So why was God letting these two kingdoms be strong and grow like they were? Why was he doing that? Do you realize what was he trying to teach the people? If you serve me, look at what I can do for you. That's the idea. If you will serve me, then this is what I can do. Now, unfortunately, the story of Uzziah comes to a bad ending. Although he lives and reigns for many, many years, he succeeded in restoring. Let me see if I can. Yeah, all the way down here, called Ezion-Geber. He restored it all the way down here, all the way down. So God really blessed him in coming all the way down here and restoring that port down there.
So, all right. So, another thing. He had a very powerful army. Very powerful army. So, Eilat was a port at the head of the Gulf of Aqaba, which is right there at the south end. And it's interesting to me that copper was mined in the vicinity. And Eilat was the door of commerce to and from the Red Sea. A lot of things like that. Now, Uzziah was a very strong king. He strengthened the walls of Jerusalem, part of which had been torn down by Joash of Israel. 2 Chronicles 25:23. He built towers in the wilderness, cisterns for the water, and he really loved farming. I think I would love farming if somebody else did it. And that's what he did. Oh, he loved farming, but he didn't put his hand to the plow. It's easy to love farming. He had many cattle and vineyards, and he really had a powerful army. An army of 307,500. The Bible indicates it was a highly trained fighting force. He provided his soldiers with the best weapons and armor available, and he also made trebuchets and things like that. Engines of warfare for the defense of Jerusalem, and the fame of Uzziah spread far and wide because God highly blessed him. So he had everything going. Everything going. Oh. But let me go ahead and mention something else. He got puffed up. Sometimes success does that to somebody. He really got puffed up. He said, "Now I'm really powerful. You know what I'm going to do? I am going to go and offer incense at the temple of Jehovah." So he got his incense ready, and he was going up to go into the temple to offer incense. And the high priest met him at the door. And he said, "I'm going to offer incense." And he said, "No, you're not. No, you're not." And as they were arguing, leprosy began to break out on the forehead of Uzziah. And as the priests were looking at him, they said, "Good, what's happening? What's happening?" And it was happening instantly. In other words, it broke out and it was spreading. And they said, "We're going to get you out of here." And he didn't need any help getting out, because what had he decided? He was angering God. And he better get out of there. So that was the idea. He was going to have to get out. So he did that. So that's what he did. And it's sad, because he was a good king. Was a king, a good king at first. But what happened to him? Became, what did you say? Yeah, egotistical. That's right. All right. And I make the point here that since the text makes a special point that Uzziah provided the weapons for warfare, it seems that the soldiers had been bringing their own weapons to battle under the previous kings. Now the next prophet that we're going to look at is going to be Amos. So Amos the prophet. So I think we'll wait until the next time to start him. And we won't give a great deal of attention to Amos, but we'll try to sum up the things. Okay.